a spiritual cutting, and all of a sudden out came a baby that was the world, right? And Genesis 1 actually goes really distinctly against that, all right? God says, no, I spoke spiritual, and out comes physical, right? God spoke, and there came into being. And he doesn't even use the word sun, or doesn't even use the word moon. He says a greater light and a lesser light, right? In stark contrast to what the world was saying at the time as to how things came into being, right? We look at Noah's view, right? If you want to look at narrowness, people in the ark live, and everybody else dies. There's one option, right? I mean, that how narrow can you get? Okay, and a few people survived and all the rest died, right? Moses, when he's leading the Israels out and says, look, here's what God says. I'm a holy God. I'm a jealous God. I'm a consuming fire. Consuming fire. That doesn't sound like it's very tolerant, right? We see, oh, okay. But then in Israel, we see shortly afterwards in Judges, people, multiple times it says, people did what was right in their own eyes. Whatever they seemed right, that's what they did. Right, and so you have this kind of diversity of, well, whatever works, that's what we do. And we see God's response to that. And we see King David, and he says, my heart and my soul cry out for God. My soul finds rest in God alone. He is making a stance there. It's God and God alone and nothing else. Right? Direct contradiction to what everybody's pursuing already. Right? Psalms 50, right about the same time as David. It's saying, you know what? Everybody just kind of makes God out to be altogether like them, right? So here you've got David who says, my heart only for God, and people are basically saying, well, God's just like me. Totally the message that we're hearing today, right? I mean, that's just all the way up to David. It was like many, many thousands of years ago, right? Then we've got things like Jonah, where he's like, well, no, God, you should be only accepting of us, the Jews, not other people. And God says, no, go. Or maybe to some of the prophets, it's marry this person, right? Dress in this way, or sometimes undress this way. Lay down this long, right? All these crazy messages that God is saying, do this, don't do that. And the people are saying, this is how we want to be, right? This isn't new necessarily, but what we are going to see is there is a slight nuance to this, and that's known as postmodernism. Postmodernism is kind of a shifty sort of thing. And if any of you are philosophy majors or, you know, study that in college, I'm going to apologize right now. I'm sure I'm going to butcher this. But I'm going to do my best to get out what postmodern actually is. Right? So postmodern basically has this view that if we say God or truth is knowable, we're kind of stretching the lines. Right? Really what we're saying is because each of us only has a finiteness, a limitation, that any one of us can only have a certain view of truth, a certain view of God, and it's going to be limited to what we are, right? And we can only know what we experience and what we see. But then the flip side of that is that because there's so many of us, that all of us collectively can get this broader picture of what truth, of what God actually is. And so that's kind of the postmodern view. And while you may be kind of going, oh, well, I'm not quite sure I like that idea, the Bible actually speaks to this, okay? The Bible actually says, wait, no, this is direct revelation. God in Romans says, I've revealed myself to man through encounters, right? Through the created world and the invisible qualities of me, right? My divine nature, my eternal power, those are made known. And so there is a little bit of truth that is consistent with what we see in Scripture with this, in the sense that people can know and perceive and understand God. And yet there's also a little bit of a sense of, but how does that fit in with things? The second point with postmodernism is that there is an experiential way of knowing. And you hear this a lot, right? I feel this. Or I had this encounter with some kind of transcendent force, right? Some kind of thing beyond me. And that encounter, that revelation, whatever that is what is dictating my truth and my understanding of truth. And right? So that's kind of the postmodern view. We're going to look at kind of how that postmodern view is approaching all these things, or most of these things that we've heard today, just in terms of what people have said. And then what we're going to do is we're going to look at, all right, what is at the heart of is Christianity too narrow? And then we're finally going to get to, what does the Bible say about the narrowness of Christianity? Before we do that, though, I want to pray, because this week has been a rough week for me, and I've realized I can't say anything to you unless God's saying it. So let's pray and ask him to move. God, you know this question. It's not a new question, but it is kind of a new question. You know it's not a new complaint, but it's kind of new. It's repackaged in our culture. So God, would you now move in us? We are frail. We are weak. We need you, the powerful God that you are, to move. We need your spirit to open my lips so the truth only comes out. We need your spirit to move amongst us so that we hear and know, and our eyes and ears and hearts are opened so we can know you. And that only happens through you, God. So come, transform us by your power. We pray this, Jesus, by your name. Amen. Okay, so let's take a look at some of these responses that people have had, right? It's going to be tough. This first part is the part that I'm kind of dreading, partly because it really gets in the philosophical point of view. And while I like to think that way, sometimes it's just hard to communicate. So bear with me. If we're going to deal with this, this is the philosophical aspect of things, all right? So really what we're saying is, can we personally know God? All right, so there's two views that we're going to take in terms of postmodern, all right? The first one is, collectively, we can get a glimpse of God, right? I.e., the religions are somehow incomplete, and that what we can do is we can actually get a glimpse of God through religion, okay? And that all of these perspectives of God are incomplete, but collectively we can kind of get to know this. All right, so here's the postmodern view essentially says, right, we've developed some kind of unconscious construct, which are glimpses or pictures of truth that all religions in some capacity illustrate about God. All right, and so that's a lot of what we heard just now, right, that somehow people know different aspects in terms of religion, somehow we know something about God. All right. Okay, and so that's kind of the general view that we can see. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, in Christianity, that's general revelation, that God has revealed himself to mankind. And so mankind should have some perspective of God that is common to all religions. Okay, so the problems with that, however, are if we're going to enforce this kind of view, we run into a postmodern dilemma, right? Because postmodernism says you can't specifically know truth, right? And we heard a gal say, oh, I just can't know. And so postmodern says you can't actually enforce this kind of truth of saying, well, I know, so therefore all religions, they are all just describing a little bit of this notion of what I actually know. And probably the best example of that comes with maybe the analogy of a king who brings this elephant in front of the court, and he says, all right, what I want is you blind men, brings in a couple of blind men, says, describe for me this elephant. And so the blind men, one holds on to the leg and feels it and says, oh, an elephant's like a tree. And another one holds on to the trunk and says, ooh, an elephant is kind of like a snake. One holds on to the ear. Ooh, an elephant is really, it's more of a fan. And maybe one grabs onto the tail and says, oh, it's more like a whip, right? And the point of that is to say, look, the blind men are the religions, and they're all describing God from different perspectives, okay? And so that's kind of the postmodern view. However, the problem with that is it's coming from the perspective of sight, right? The king is saying, we see the elephant. All of us are saying, we see the elephant, right? And religions don't. They're the blind. And so what postmodern is doing is basically saying, I can see that all things are not quite right and that religions can't see. Can you see the problem there? From the postmodern perspective, right? That we actually, you can't say you know. What that does is actually causes other people to go, wait a minute, how can you say you know and we can't say we know, right? And that's the conflict with the postmodern. And so really what we have to do, and you heard this in this example, is people have to go, in the postmodern view, they have to say, well, I really just can't know. And that's the only thing that they can really say. I can't know. As soon as they start making a pronouncement that, well, there's just partial views of religion, of God, they're outstepping what their tenets are in terms of not knowing. For us, then, the problem with that is we've had too many experiences where we can say, wait a minute, not knowing? We live in an age of information, right? And you're saying you just can't know anything, right? Culturally, I think we can even make an argument saying you shouldn't be in a state of not knowing. You should know something, right? Our hearts go, that's not right. We've got to know something. And this is what we see here, right? This postmodern view, it sounds kind of smart and cliche or kind of, you know, catchy, but it really doesn't get us anywhere except saying we don't know. And our hearts don't rest well with that. We have to move on to something else. Something else has to be out there that actually is stronger than this notion of not knowing. And so a second perspective of this is that revelation actually can give us some kind of experience. All right, and here what we see is we can obtain truth through revelation. Okay, and this is that notion that all religions are all really saying the same thing, right? They're all really saying the same message. They all have this kind of relationship with some sort of revelation of this higher power, and they're all really just saying the same thing. Okay, and that God is really revealing himself to all religions in this aspect. The dilemma with that, however, is that really is taking away from every single religion, right? It's basically saying, well, okay, what you actually say isn't what you're saying. Okay, here's what we're going to tell you you're going to say. Okay, it's not celebrating the diversity of religion. It's actually just saying, no, none of you are actually saying the right thing. We're going to tell you what the right thing is. Again, it's this really arrogant perspective of saying, you don't know what you're saying. I'm going to tell you what you're saying. Okay, I did a little bit of research on this and looked up what are the foundations of a couple of world religions, right? What's the foundation of Hindu? What's the foundation of Islam? What's the foundation of Christianity? You compare even just those three. What we see is there is no similarity between those, right? The major tenets of these are no similarity, right? Islam says Jesus was a prophet that everybody really misunderstood except Islam. Christianity says Jesus is the Son of God. Everything rests on Jesus. You can't go, well, they're kind of saying the same thing. They aren't. Jesus is just kind of a minor dude in Islam, and he is the absolute crux of what we have in Christianity. Somebody's going, oh, well, those two are just saying the same thing, right? So you could say the same thing with Hinduism, right? Oh, they're kind of saying the same thing. No, they're not. Do a little research. They are not saying the same thing. The foundations of it are. And so now if you're going to water down all religions and basically go, well, if you really get to it, they're really saying the same kind of thing, you're really being arrogant. And actually what you're doing is you're dismissing what it is that any of these religions are actually saying. You're going against postmodern thought because postmodern says, well, I really can't know the truth. And so all of these things have to know the truth. And you are saying, well, no. Well, these people actually don't know the truth, or they actually have a little bit of truth, but I'm telling you they actually have, I have the better amount of truth. And that is so contrary, right? And so now, essentially what they're saying is they're using this term that Alistair McGrath has described, which is pluralistic, I'm blanking on the term now, prescriptive pluralism, all right? And so basically what it says is, rather than saying there is diversity in terms of religion, it's actually saying you have to believe this kind of thing. You have to believe that all of them are this way, right? So if we're describing the diversity of religions, we're really going against what postmodern says and saying we have to do this, right? You have to say that all of these are like this. All these religions are like this. And that's totally contrary to the notion of postmodernism, which basically says there's truth around, right? And it's totally against, I think, just a respect of people. Right? If you're celebrating diversity, how are you all of a sudden going to say, well, no, all of you have it wrong, right? And I think that's what makes, you know, to some degree, you know, you've probably seen those bumper stickers, the coexist bumper stickers, right? All of those have some sort of religious icon on it. And what they're saying is, all of you are wrong. Just get along. Do what I'm in prescribing, right? Just get along. Coexist, okay? And that should, I think, every single one of those religions represented in that whatever bumper sticker should go, no, you can't. That is just as arrogant and just as narrow in saying that yours is the only view as saying any of these others of religion, right? So if we are saying everybody's the same, that's just as narrow as saying that this religion isn't too narrow, or that religion is too narrow, or this religion is too narrow, right? So by saying everything is the same, we're really enforcing this notion of narrowness ourselves, okay? And so this whole notion of something being too narrow, everything that we're talking about is too narrow, right? Because everything is coming out of perspective of knowledge, and everything is coming out of perspective of this must be the case. It's just coming in this perspective kind of nicely wrapped, right? Oh, yeah, everything's nice. Everything is, oh, yeah, all the people, they can just coexist. No, wait a minute. That totally goes against what any of these religions are really saying, these major religions are saying. The flip side of this, then, is the second part is kind of a descriptive pluralism, right? So there now, if we say, all right, God actually does describe who he is to all these religions, and all of these are legitimate, I think that's even one of the worst kind of things we can say. Because now what we're saying is God actually reveals himself to Hindus in this way, and it totally contradicts how God reveals himself to Muslims, and it totally contradicts how God reveals himself to Jews and Mormons and Christians. We're happy with that, right? Huh? Total contradiction, and yet what we're saying is, that's good? Like, our hearts should start squirming in us, going, that is not right. That doesn't even make sense. How would a God do that? That's not one God that's doing that. And now we're talking about pluralism God, and no, that's, now we're not even talking about God. God has to be one who is there and who is disseminating, revealing himself to religions. And so I think this is why you really don't hear this message too often. Oh yeah, they're all right, because it doesn't make sense, right? If you're really saying they're all right and you look at each of what each religion is saying, they contradict each other, and there's no way that there would be a God who's going to reveal himself that way and contradict himself to that degree, right? And so I think what we can see is that these two scattered views really, you know, this idea that religions are kind of incomplete, right? That's an intolerant message, right? It's a narrow message. That religions are all saying the same thing. That's an intolerant message, okay? A narrow message, okay? And so just the fact of saying that is actually putting you in a position of either knowing something when you shouldn't know by definition, or by saying, I'm intolerant because religions don't know all these things. And so that's kind of that. That's the philosophical answers to those things. To me, I've had these kind of conversations with people. I have yet to make these kind of arguments, and people go, wow, you're right. I had never thought about that. I'm just going to believe in Jesus now, right? So those kind of things are good. We need to know about those things. We need to be able to have those kind of arguments. We need to be able to get to the heart of what is really at stake and go, look, you are saying the same thing as me, but you're just being as narrow as I am being narrow, right? And now if you can start leveling that field, now you can start having conversations that are going to engage in things that are actually at the heart of what questions are. And that's what we're getting to next, okay? The next part is, what is really the heart at this question? Is Christianity too narrow? What does it reveal about ourselves? And this is where I think we can really kind of focus, where we can really get into some aspects of it that I think is really hitting home. So the first is, we don't like this notion that Christianity is too narrow, or that something is too narrow. Somehow it hits us in a place that we feel quite vulnerable, that we feel exposed, that maybe we feel kind of uncomfortable, because what it's really telling us is what you're doing isn't good enough, right? There's something that's too narrow. You mean there's something out there that I could get to, but I can't? I don't like that. And so you're going to hear kind of two responses in the sense of, we want to feel justified. Okay, we want to feel justified, and this notion that there is something that is really limited in how we get justified, we don't like at all, because it speaks to our heart. It starts revealing our heart. All right, and so there's two ways that we can look at that in terms of how we feel justified. It's going to be by license or by law. We'll look at that. And then the second is, we're going to recognize that we aren't with God, but we actually want it. All right, so I think those are two things that we'll look at in terms of this question, the heart of this question. Okay, so the first one. What does it feel when we want to feel justified? All right, so the first thing here now is people want to live the way they want to live. Okay? People actually want to live. And this notion is, God should accept me no matter what I do. God should accept me. He should say, all right, I love you unconditionally. We have this wonderful pursuit that we're looking for in relationships. We're saying, I want someone who's going to love me unconditionally. And guess what? We never find it. We don't find somebody who actually loves us unconditionally, but we want it. Okay, our hearts yearn for something like this, but we're not finding it. And the reason why is because we're yearning for God to love us in that way. God to actually accept us just in that capacity. Okay? But yet there's this tension. Because the tension is we actually know we're not lovable. If you look in your heart, you know you're not lovable. You know you've done things that people have been hurt by, right? Or maybe you've done things that you've hurt others, right? We know in our hearts there are things that we've done that just, they cause pain. And maybe it's big things, maybe it's small things, that, you know, but all of us have done those kind of things that actually have caused pain. And so those of us who are going and hearing this, that we say, wait a minute, I've caused pain, but yet God should still love me. And really what we're saying is, even though I do these things, God should still love me. And we're looking for, when we object to this question, what people are doing is they're saying, really, I want to live how I want to live because I like how I live. I want to live how I live. And this question is causing me to look bad. In fact, it's actually causing me to look like I will never make it into a relationship with God. And so, of course, you're going to get objection to this, right? If you start being told you're wrong, or if you start being told you are not doing enough to make it into whatever, you're going to object because you're going to say, I feel like I need to be loved. I feel like I shouldn't be told I'm wrong. And so we have at the heart of this a resistance, not to this question, but a heart of resistance to how it makes us feel. It makes us feel bad. And if we don't like feeling bad, we're going to say, don't ask me those kind of questions, or don't tell me I'm feeling bad. I want to do what I want to do. It feels good. I like what it does, and so I'm going to pursue it. And that's at the heart of this kind of question, right? That people are looking for a reason why they should be accepted. There's another flip side to this, because I'm sure some of you are probably going, oh yeah, I know those kind of people. I know those kind of people. They just don't, they don't like to be corrected. They don't like to, you know, I've thought already of, you know, that person there. They, and whenever that happens, they blow a gasket, right? I know some folks like that. The flip side to this, I think, is a little bit more personal. I think it's more fitting to those of us who are in this room. Because that is, some of us actually think we deserve this. We deserve to be in the camp that's too narrow, right? And what we are is we're actually confident in being in that camp that's too narrow. Hey, I'm a believer. I'm in. You're not. Ha-ha. But all of a sudden now we're in this position where we like the fact that we are in a group and other people aren't. And we love it. But deep down we actually know I don't belong in this group. Because deep down we know there's nothing that separates us from this other person. They're actually very much the same as us. They blow gaskets, they get angry, I get angry. And deep down, we know. And so we kind of know, at least some of us, I think, recognize, even though I may be in this group, and I feel proud about being in this group, I don't deserve to be in this group. I don't deserve this. In fact, I should be out of this group. And yet, what we do is we flaunt it, right? And we're telling other people, well, you're not in this group, right? You're a sinner. I'm in this group. I'm pretty good. And we somehow think our
motives. We somehow think our thoughts are good enough to earn being in this group. And that's not true at all. We are just as evil as the next person in terms of how much we can approach a holy God. There's actually a part two to this. And that is, some of you are probably going, oh yeah, I'm good. I don't feel that way. Okay? And some of you are actually blind to this view. You think you're pretty good. You think I belong. I'm pretty good. You know, we may say, hey, do you have anything to pray for? And you'd say, no, can't think of anything. My life's pretty good. And yet what you're sitting on is chaos. And it's all around you. Your relationship with God stinks. Your marriage stinks. You get angry at your spouse. You fight with your spouse constantly. Your kids, can't even stand them. Like they do one little thing and it's enough. And you've just been overloaded with your kids totally. And you're blown it. Maybe you're searching after relationships that don't satisfy. Maybe you're searching after pleasures that don't satisfy. Maybe you're flaunting yourself. Maybe you're proud of what you do and how good you are at something. These are all things that are really diminishing what you have. Diminishing your ability to experience the joy of a relationship with God, because what you're doing is you're pursuing these things. Some of you actually may even be pretty ticked off at me right now, because I just hit in a place that you didn't like. And that itself reveals something, doesn't it? I'm preaching about the total depravity of people, of everyone, and you're going, he shouldn't be saying that about me. What's that reveal about your heart? Here's what it reveals, is that you're arrogant. That you think you can somehow earn. That you think you can somehow have a relationship with God because you are going to do whatever you want and he's just going to have to accept you. And that's wrong. We've got people that if God is moving in your heart right now, we've got people in the back at the end of the sermon that will pray with you. And that you can confess the kind of things that you can say, you know what, I am broken. My life is not good. I need God. And we'll pray with you. And you know what, we restore gently, because that's how God does. He restores gently and gives us grace and mercy through Jesus. All right, so the second part then is we know that there is a God, but we aren't with God. All right? We recognize we aren't with God, but we want it. All right? And I think this part is really gets to the key of this question. Because what we're saying is there is a God out there who promises complete, beautiful life. And I don't have it yet. And so we see it in our hearts and we say, I want it. I want beautiful, abundant, overflowing life. And I've been pursuing that with everything I do. And yet all these things that I'm pursuing do not satisfy, right? Our hearts are yearning for something and yet we don't have it. And C.S. Lewis says it really well, right? If we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world, right? That's what this question is really getting at. Does your heart actually yearn for abundant life? Does it yearn for a God who's there? And we're not talking about just a God who's like a grandfather, just pats you on the back, right? We're talking about an amazing God. And so if we have this notion in our hearts, right? And I think we all do. If we're talking about this question, we have this saying, we have this notion in our hearts. We have had an experience where we say, I want a relationship with that. I want life that's like that. I look at this life and I don't have it. I want it. That's what this question is really getting at. We may be resisting of, well, no, that's too hard. That way is too hard. I don't like that. But it still gets to the heart of we need to have a relationship with God. We need and want, our hearts desire a relationship with God. All right, so let's take a look then at who God really is. Okay? This is the part I've been looking forward to. A lot of this other stuff, I've been like, okay, well, here comes the meat, right? So let's take a look at who God is, right? And I've got a list here. I've shown it to my kids yesterday. They gave me a couple yesterday, too. It was great. All right, so let's take a look. All right, so God, he is a lawmaker, right? So what is a lawmaker? Well, it's someone who's going to make laws. Oh, great. A God who makes laws. Hey, these are not those kind of laws. These are the kind of laws that when God makes these laws that we go, that's a good law. Oh, we need to get that law. That's a good one, right? And when people actually break the law and they get brought to justice, we're like, yes, that needed to happen because that person broke the law and that was a good law, right? Hey, when justice happens, we say, yes. And that's what we mean by a lawmaker, right? It's that kind of lawmaker, not all these little piddly things that we all think, right? These are the kind of laws that are good. And then we say, yes, I want that kind of lawmaker. That's God. Right, God's the king. When we say king, and here in the U.S., we're like, oh, okay, king, sure, right? We didn't elect him president. We're not talking president here. We're talking king. This is the kind of king that's not the, you know, I'm going to destroy you, the tyrant. This is the kind of king that when this king rules, the land prospers. When this king rules, the people are joyful. When this king rules, everything good is happening in his kingdom. That's the kind of king I like. Yeah, I want that kind of king, not the kind of king that's oppressive and tyrant and going to grind it down. This is the kind of king that people are skipping down the streets because the king is good and has my best interest and the people's best interest in mind, not selfish interest. That's the kind of God that we're talking about. He's the one who rules over everything, right? He's the maker and owner of everything. Oh, yeah. That's the kind of God that we want to serve, the one who has made everything and who owns everything. Ooh, that's huge, right? He has made every single thing and owns everything. So everything that we've got, we look and go, oh, wow, he's made this. The air I'm breathing, he's made. He's the owner of it, right? He's the kind of God who loves, right? This one probably hits best with our culture. He's the one who loves unconditionally. Unconditional. Right? Sees you and loves unconditionally. That's the kind of God we want. Right? Wait, but I'm broken. Yeah, he still loves you. Oh, that's the kind of God we want. That's the kind of relationship we want. The one who's long-suffering, right? I am so slow sometimes. And he doesn't go, I told you once, come on. It's the kind of long-suffering, patient, who walks through you and celebrates the joy of you growing and growing and becoming more and more mature. That's the kind of God. That's the kind of relationship that our hearts are longing for. It's the kind of God who speaks truth, right? The postmodern says, we humans, we can't know truth. This is God. God is the one who's made truth. He is truth. He proclaims truth. Truth should come. He's all-knowing. He should know truth, and it should come out of him. That's the kind of God we're talking about. God is proclaiming truth. He speaks truth, and it is total truth. All right, totally other, right? God isn't just a kind of like us. Just maybe slightly above. He is totally, completely higher, way more than anything, right? He's not a super athlete or a superhero. This is the kind of God that is way abundantly more, right? And our hearts yearn for that. We like superheroes, at least my boys do, right? We watch the movies. That is just a glimpse, right? We actually want a God who is amazing so that we could watch him and it's like a sunrise. Every morning. Or it's like looking at the Grand Canyon and it's amazing. That's the kind of God we want. All right, gracious. This is what my kids came up with. Gracious. Hey, we want a God who's actually going to give and give and give and then give and then give. And I didn't get anything. He just keeps on giving and giving and giving. Like when we talk about a relationship with God, that's the kind of God I want. Oh, all right. This fan, and we can go on and on and on. I mean, these are attributes of God that are just Beautiful. Okay, great, good. So now, what? Okay, well, if this is who God is, how do we get to God? Well, it's pretty easy. You have to follow the laws. If he's a God who made all the laws, then you just follow all the laws. If you've broken the laws, well, you're going to get the punishment, and it's not going to be wait, I didn't deserve that. It's going to be, no, you broke that law, you deserve punishment, and people are going to see you get punished, and they're going to go, yep, he deserved it. He's the king. Right, so the king, that means we're not rebellious. We're not trying to, you know, get him dethroned. That we actually go, oh, no, yeah, you are king. And in our hearts and our minds, we're not treasonous. Oh, well, that's not me. Well, maker and owner of everything, right? So that means everything I have should be his. It means I shouldn't be selfish with the things I have. I shouldn't hold on to the things I have. And instead, I should just be freely giving. Oh, that's not me. Loves. Oh, he loves everybody? Oh, so I should be loving everybody, right? That means I should take care of the poor and the needy and the broken and the contrite of heart and those who are, you know, arrogant and those who are weak. I should be loving everyone. Wait, what about that guy at work? Oh, yeah. What about my neighbor? You see what he did? Yeah, love them too. Oh, well, that's harder to do. I can't do that. Long-suffering. If God is long-suffering with us, then we should be long-suffering. I can't do that. Oh, no. Right? Truth. Am I proclaiming truth all the time? No. What? Totally other? No. Right? When we look at this list, we should celebrate. That's the kind of God we want. And as soon as we see that, we should start seeing, I can't do any of these things. Not one. This is saying that Christianity is not too narrow, or really it's saying that a relationship with God is not too narrow. What it's saying is a relationship with God is impossible. It's not narrowness, it's just impossible. Flat out, you can't do any of these things. If God is any one of these things, you can't do enough to get to him. And that's what really we're faced with. And that's where, if you look at religions, most of what they're doing is saying, this is what you have to do in order to get to God. Most of the foundation things that you say, this is what you have to do in order to get to God. And that's what people are seeing and hearing when they're talking about religion. Hey, here's what, most of them are just saying, be kind to one another. Hey, good. That kind of fulfills the love. What about the law? We don't really talk about that. Or this religion talks about we were going to follow the law. Oh, okay. Speaking truth, is that what you do? Or we don't do that, right? All religions, if they're saying you can do and fulfill all of these things, are falling short. It's impossible. And so, if we say too narrow, is impossibility too narrow? I guess, yeah. But this isn't just Christianity. This is everything. This is relationship with God. It's impossible. And so, we could end there. And I think we'd all go home and go, what a downer of a sermon. Relationship with God is impossible. There's no hope for humanity. We can't even have a God that our hearts are made to respond to these kinds of things. And so God, in his sovereignty, knew that. He knew, yeah, you're right. You can't do that. And so what he did is he sent his one and only son to do these things. Right? So if you now say, Jesus, and how does he respond to the lawmaker? He followed every law. All right? With the king, I mean, Jesus countless times is saying, I am doing the Father's will. Whatever the Father's will is, I am doing it. He's responding and obedient completely. Right? The maker and owner of everything, hey, Jesus said, foxes have holes. I have no place to lay my head. I am giving you, I hold on to nothing. Right? He loves. Okay, but he's not, this is amazing, right? He loves, he's the kind of lover who actually will speak the truth, right? Knowing this is what you need. This is actually what you need to hear, not just there to that a boy. But it's not just that. It's also he loves the sick. But he doesn't just go, nice, I'm sorry you're sick. He touches him and says, you're healed. Healed. The lame walk, the blind see. I mean, this is way more than love. This is accomplishing these things, right? He's long-suffering. Jesus got persecuted. He got things were said about him that were horrendous. You're a son of the devil. And Jesus was long-suffering, just like God is. He taught truth, right? He's totally others. I mean, all these things that Jesus did. See, the beautiful thing about it is God said, you can't do it. And so instead, now what he's done is he said, all right, Jesus is going to fulfill all these things that you can't. And that's the gospel. You cannot earn your way. God is going to earn the way. And it's all of these things. It's so easy to get caught on any one of these things, but all of these things are actually, this is the essence of what God has done in sending his one, his only son, Jesus, to do all of these things. All right, so now we've got one who is both man and God, all right? And that's Jesus, right? That's the pivotal thing about Christianity, one of them, right? Is Jesus is man, so he's like us, but he's God because he can follow all of these things that are on the screen. Jesus now does the impossible. He does the impossible. Wow. Okay, wow. So let's look finally then at Scripture. What does Scripture say? All right. And this, we're going to look at John 10, 7 through 13. We're going to have to go fast here, right? So I won't even read it. But what, one of the things you can actually see is that he is saying some outrageous statements unless he's God. He's saying, truly, truly, I say to you. A postmodern would be throwing their arms up. What? Okay. He's either lying, he's insane, or he's saying the truth. You can't get any one of those three. Like, those are the only options. He's saying truth. I'm giving you truth. And he's not just going, I'm just, you know, shouting to the wind. He's backing this up with action completely and totally. Look at this. Jesus in verse 7 there saying, I'm the door. He is saying, I am the way. It was impossible before. It's possible now. I'm the way. I'm the door. Come. Come through me. And look, wow, he's even making this bold statement. Others are thieves and robbers. Others are not the way. They're saying they're the way. They're not. They're just trying to steal and rob you. Jesus is saying, we need saving there in verse 8. You need to be saved. That's the state that we've already seen, right? We need saving. We need a relationship with God. We can't do it. And so Jesus is saying, I've come to save. I've come to rescue. He's saying in verse 10 there, I'm giving you abundant life, right? It's not just a, huh, okay, it's a way. But he's saying, I'm giving you abundant life, and it's going to be to the fullest. Your life is going to be rich and meaningful and beautiful. And that is what he's offering, right? I love that passage there, open pastures, right? The freedom to go in and out and find pasture. That's exactly what a sheep wants. My parents-in-law, they have sheep, and that's what a sheep does. It walks and it eats, and it walks some more and it eats, and that's exactly what Jesus is offering. Everything our hearts want, everything that we are made for, that's what he's providing. That's the kind of abundant life that we have. All right, he's the good shepherd. One shepherd, right? He's not one of many shepherds. Jesus is declaring himself as the one good shepherd. And notice what the shepherd has to do. He's got to lay down his life. Do you see that? The shepherd has to die. Sacrifice has to happen. That's the impossibility, right? All of us deserve it. And yet now the shepherd is saying, I am going to lay down my life. I am going to take all the things that you, the sheep, deserve, and instead it's going to come on me. And now me, the perfection, the beauty, the righteousness, everything that was on me, now when I raise, is getting disseminated and put and covered on you. So that now when God sees you, he sees total coverage of me, Jesus. That's freedom. That's life. That's abundant life. All right. A couple other things, right? One flock and one shepherd in verse 16. And then Jesus says he has the authority. To lay down his life and the authority to take it up again. This is God here, right? No one says, I'm going to die and I'm just going to make myself undead. I'm going to rise from the dead. Right? We don't, no one says that, right? You'd be laughed at. And indeed, Jesus, when he said these things, people laughed at him. He's in, what? Crazy. Right? So what we see here is we have the impossibleness of mankind having a relationship with God. And we have Jesus who says very boldly in this text, and I mean, you could pick almost any text in Scripture, and it's going to say something very similar to this, that it's only through sacrifice that we can pay for sin. That it's only through the blemishness of us that gets put on the unblemished that we're going to have a relationship with God. Right? That it's only through the confession of our sin that we can actually have the joy of salvation. Right? It's only through one good shepherd that we can have a relationship with God. So now, as Josh and the crew are coming up, I want us to take a look at one last passage. And I don't have the notes for it, but it's in Matthew and it's in Mark. And it talks about Jesus in the garden. And this is the night he gets betrayed. This leads to his death on the cross, a gruesome death where the sins of the world are put on him, and he's going to die. And what Jesus is saying in the garden is he's saying, Father, Abba, you can do everything. You can do everything. Nothing's impossible to you. Is there another way? Is there another way that these people can know God? And the Father three times says, no, this is the way. This is the truth. This is the life. It's you taking on sin, Jesus. It's you taking death and dying. Christianity says it was impossible, but now there was one who did the impossible so that you could have life and have it to its fullest. Jesus, the man, was saying, is there another way? Our hearts are saying, is there any other way? And God here says, no, it's only through Jesus. Our culture said, is there any other way? And here Jesus in the garden is asking that same question. And it's no. There's no other way. It's only through Jesus, only through the perfection of Jesus. Now that we believe in him, that's it. We believe. We have faith in Jesus. No works. He did all the work. And now through him we have life. And life in its full, abundant, radiant joy. So that we can know a God as intimately as God knows himself. As the Father knows me, so we will know you. That's what the Good Shepherd said. That's the kind of relationship we have. Only through Jesus. Yeah, that's exclusive. But there's a way. There is a way. And it comes through Jesus. All right, at this time, we're going to respond. We're going to respond through singing. We're going to respond through communion in the back. If you're a believer, you can partake in the body, the way to God, the blood, the way to God, the relationship with God. You can respond through giving. We've got boxes in the back here. You can say, you own everything. God, here, take these gifts, take these offerings. Some of you may have felt God push you, and you know you need to pray. You know you need to confess something. You know you need to say, I'm broken. We've got people in the back. Simon's in the back. I'll be in the back. Come and pray. Don't miss this opportunity. Psalm 51 says, if I confess, I have the joy of salvation. Confess your sin to one another so that you'll be healed. Let's worship.